our next speaker is going to be John from Pornhuena. He's from California. Or no, that's you. John's from Tucson. I lied. Sorry.
Hi, everybody. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. And for this LBGT panel, I represent the gay. I got sober in May 10th, 1989. My last drink. It was a miracle. I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. And whatever happens, happens, but I want to cover a few gay-related things since that's the topic of this panel. But the first thing that comes to mind is this wonderful AA and the Gay Lesbian Alcoholic pamphlet. I was living in Dallas, and there was a gentleman that was the delegate, and he did the delegate representing the Dallas area. And when this pamphlet was first come about, they were debating it. This is a story he told me, that they were debating whether or not there needs to be a gay and lesbian alcoholic pamphlet. And the sentiment was that we are so segmented already that we don't need a specific pamphlet, and like we don't need a Catholic pamphlet for Catholic alcoholics, for Black alcoholics, for Native American alcoholics, that we're just all garden variety drunks and we need to focus on the similarities and not the differences. And he said that that was the sentiment, was that they had been discussing whether there was a need for a specific pamphlet, and the decision was that there wasn't. And when it came his turn to talk, either during the minority opinion or just his turn to discuss it, he said, "I am from Texas." He said, "Does anybody here sponsor anyone that's gay or lesbian?" And nobody raised their hand. And he said, "Well, I do, and we need this pamphlet." And it turned the whole tide, and after that, they voted to create the pamphlet. So, I think that's the group conscious at work. That's the miracle of AA, that this one man that had a wife and kids, was probably heterosexual, felt the need for this pamphlet, and now we have it. So when anyone walks into the meeting and they are wondering if they belong, I mean, as alcoholics, my thinking is I always automatically feel different, like I don't belong, that I don't qualify. I think that's my default, is that I'm not a part of. So I was looking for any reason not to belong. So when I see this pamphlet on the shelf, and I'm gay, or I'm confused, or I've had one homosexual experience, and now I'm wondering if I fit in that category or not, that I can say, oh my gosh, you know, there's a whole pamphlet for gay and lesbian alcoholics. So I just wanted to cover that, because I think that's a beautiful story. I called my sponsor, and I said, "I'm speaking on a panel today. Topic is LBGT. Do you have any suggestions?" And he said, "John, be honest." And that's always to pull in the principle. I had to get honest about my drinking before I could get sober, and I needed to get honest about my sexuality. When I came here, I think it was a huge deal. It was a big deal. I think my sexuality, I was from a small West Texas community, and my sexuality made me feel different. I don't attribute my alcoholism to my sexuality. I don't really even link it, really. I mean, I have such a lineage of heterosexual alcoholics in my family. But it was interesting. What I think was so freeing and so wonderful were a few things. I could go to some meetings that were for special interest meetings. My heterosexual sponsor, who said he'd only ever slept with his wife, suggested that I go to a variety of meetings, including meetings that were geared towards gay and lesbians. And that was, I think that was really good for me to see sober gay people. It's not all of who I am, so I needed to, he also suggested I go to just generic garden variety alcoholic meetings. You know, and sometimes I'll go to a men's meeting, and I qualify for special interest, but I'm also have that default of, you know, I'm special, I'm unique, I'm different. So I'm really glad that I've always gone to meetings that were for any alcoholic, but I've also included going to meetings of special interest meetings. I want to talk a little bit about coming out. I don't know that I was ever in, but you know, coming out is a process, and as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to be honest, and I need to practice that principle of honesty, being real, and being genuine in all areas of my life. It says we have to practice these principles in all of our affairs, so I've had to do that. Whether I want to talk to my family about it or, you know, open up to my friends about it or not, it's sort of incumbent upon me to be real. I don't have to wear, you know, have to have a flag on my shirt, but I need to be honest with myself and honest with the people I love and let them know a little bit who I am. And I really, that's the process of working all of the 12 steps and taking all of the 12 steps. However, one of the I know there's a lot of suffering in the gay and lesbian community. I just know that. Lot of suffering. You know, there's probably some gay people next door that probably wanted to be over here, but they don't want the stigma, or they have a fear. And I'm not a mind reader. I'm just, you know, projecting a little bit. But I think that's, you know, sort of human nature. And what really gave me a tremendous amount of freedom was doing a sex inventory. You know, how the whole idea that I had to get honest about my drinking in step one, I really had to get honest about who I was in my inventory. And the four-step inventory says we need to look at our resentments, our fears, and our sex lives. And I always marvel that, you know, this program, I guess Bill probably started writing this book in 1934, and he knew, or, you know, had some, I don't know what he had, an insight or a wisdom or a divine inspiration, but he says, you know, you guys need to look at your sex life, and gay people and straight people, we need to look at our sex life. And sort of the big picture is, when I look at my sex life, if it's dark and murky and I feel shame about it, and then that's sort of what my whole life looks like. I can really look at my sex life and see how my entire spiritual life is being. Am I being secretive and sort of lustful, or am I being practicing the higher calling types of principles in my life? So I think it's amazing that Bill put this sex inventory in our textbook. I did a sex inventory. It was extremely powerful. And if some, I know many of you are new and maybe haven't done that, but it was very freeing for me. I had to make a list of everyone I had sex with, and I answered those 9 questions, and it was, I didn't feel good about it at all. I didn't feel comfortable about having to write about that. You know, I got to AA with I thought there was something wrong with me. I did. I thought there was something wrong with me. I think that was inherent to being an alcoholic, but I think also I thought there was something wrong with my sexuality. I finished that inventory, and I went to my sponsor, and I'm like, I can't believe I have to read this. We sat down. He said, John, before you read your sex inventory, I want to let you know that I've only ever slept with my wife. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I'm going to have to read the blonde guy in Ventura, you know, from my sex inventory to this man and review this. And I was like, it was like, oh gosh. But, you know, I had made a decision, to be honest, with one person when I got sober. I didn't really know it was a spiritual program at all, but I asked God to help me please be honest with my sponsor. So I did read him all those names. I reviewed the sex situation. I asked all those 9 questions about each sexual situation. And really, at the end of that whole inventory, he said that he loved me, and I believed it. I felt completely, any sexual obsession that I'd felt was completely lifted. I was a periodic drinker, an esprit drinker, so I could go periods of time without drinking, but I was always sort of like sex was sort of up out here somewhere in front of me, you know? I couldn't keep it quite in the right proportion in my life. So it was incredibly wonderful that whole obsession was lifted. It was like, I don't have to think about drinking or sex or, you know, it was a miracle, really. And it was just really, I was taught that honesty will relieve the obsession of the mind. And it really happened in my sex inventory. That's, you know, the steps are the cure-all for me in terms of accepting who I am. About 5 or 6 years sober, I was in neutral. I was in neutral in my life. I wasn't happy, joyous, and free. But I certainly was so much better than I had been early on. You know, the steps had transformed my life, but I was just really neutral. And I called this next sponsor up because I'd moved to a new town. And suggested that I go away to a retreat. And, you know, the big book talks about doing inventories. It says we, you know, there's like the spot check inventory during the day, and then there's the inventory we take at night, and that many of us go in for an annual or semi-annual house cleaning. So I went away, and I just thought, I'm gonna go to this retreat. And I met this monk, and I'm pretty anonymous, and I didn't tell him I was in AA. He said, why are you here? And I didn't really know. I said, I'm not really sure why I'm here. And he gave me some suggestions. He said, why don't you go to some of the religious services and get in touch with nature and get on your knees tonight and ask, you know, before you hit the bed, and ask God to reveal why you're here. And I had a dream that said, do a 4-step. So I went back the next day and I told him, and he said, do you know what a 4-step is? And I said, yeah, I do. He said, well, if you don't, I have a book in my room. And I said, I know how to do it. And he says, why don't you do a 4-step and we'll come back and do a 5th step tomorrow. And, you know, I did another very thorough inventory. And at the end of that, he said, God loves you just the way you are. He said, well, he actually said, forgive yourself as God has forgiven you. Love yourself as God loves you, and accept yourself as God accepts you. And I needed to hear that. But it's like, you know, it was like it could bump me out of neutral to being happy again. So the steps are really the cure-all for me. And I think sex is an important topic. It's sort of, and I've had the privilege of doing very thorough sex inventories with a lot of guys I sponsor, straight, gay, curious, whatever. And I've really I've had the experience of my life transforming through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've seen it in other people's lives. So that's why I'm still here 21 years later. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Okay, and last but not least, we have Paul from California.
Hi, everybody. I'm a real alcoholic. My name's Paula.
Hey, Paula.
And when I got here, I said my name was Julie, and I was just visiting. And I never not identify without my last name, so I had to say that so that I remember to keep the tradition of anonymity secure. So I want to thank Tim and the committee for asking me to come out and speak this afternoon. Do you know, in all of my sobriety, I've never spoken on the topic of LGBT. I'm the L in the LGBT, in case you were wondering. Tim said I could be the T, but I'm pretty sure they're real. I want to thank my sponsor for sitting through this and for coming this weekend. Her and her husband and a friend of ours, we are all here for the... We've been asked to participate in Beef Service. It's really an honor and a privilege to be here. I have a sobriety date. It's February 17th, 1991. It's nice to be a newcomer on the panel. I really appreciate that. I have a sponsor. And I have a home group that I'm not attending because I'm mad at them. It's my truth. It is. I'm just mad at them right now. And that'll probably change when I change my attitude and do the assignment that was given to me 3 months ago. So, I mean, I really never talk about my sexuality because for me it really just hasn't been an issue since I came out. And I came out actually on national television, October 10th, 1991. I was half naked. I was sober. I was on the bridge in Sacramento. We were protesting for gay rights. And I intended to be half naked. Who am I lying? It's like, it was really hot that day, and I had a problem when I first got sober keeping my clothes on. And I looked a lot smaller than this. I was like 20 years ago. I was a lot younger, and I was definitely a lot smaller, and they looked really cute in that black lace bra and hoochie shorts, and that's what I was wearing when I came out on national television. It wasn't my intention to come out that night. It really wasn't. I had a girlfriend. I used to make her walk on the opposite side of the street when we were in public because I didn't want people to know I was gay. And it was just really hard for me. I came out at 35. I was divorcing my third husband when I got sober. And I had a daughter who was a month shy of 16. And I was raised in this Irish-Italian Catholic family. And back in the 50s and 60s, I didn't know anybody that felt like I did. Because I didn't talk about it to anybody. I knew at 11 with my best friend, I was pretty sure that I liked doing what we were doing, even though she wasn't real fond of it. And when she cut me off at 11 and a half, that I was just devastated. I didn't, you know, and like I said, I didn't really know anybody like me. So I grew up to be the woman I thought I was supposed to be, which was married with kids. And those 18 years with those three husbands were drunken, just drunk. I was never sober through the whole 18 years. So when I got sober, I tried dating a couple of guys, and I had fun dating. They just wanted to hold hands or kiss goodnight or get intimate, and it just freaked me out. It really did. So I thought that I was like dating challenged or socially challenged. And I would write in my journal about how it made me feel. And one day I talked to my sponsor, my first sponsor, her name was Denise, and I said, look, I'm having a really great time with these guys. I love that they're paying for dinner, and I love that they're taking me to the movies or that we're going here or there, but I really can't do this kissing and holding hand things. It's just freaking me out. And I live in this recovery home with a bunch of, please don't be offended, but this is what I said, dykes. And I said, I don't know if I'm supposed to be there for my recovery or because I think I might be gay. And she said, it's okay if you think you might be gay. You know, I'm going to love you anyway. And if somewhere down the line you think you're not gay, I'm still going to love you. I'm here to work the steps with you. And when you stop wearing your sexuality on your sleeve, maybe you'll be okay with it. And I thought, wow, that was really good advice, actually. But I wasn't comfortable with it. I mean, like I said, I'm one of eight kids, and I'm the only lesbian. I'm the only gay person in the family that's come out. That's all I'm saying. And it just, I really didn't know how to be gay. The truth is that, so I cut all my hair off. It was really long. And I tried to wear guys' clothes, but I was still wearing nails and makeup, and I was just confused. I didn't know, what is gay? How do you be gay? And like I said, and I used to make my girlfriend walk on the opposite side of the street and pretend like we weren't together. And so on that national coming out day, I was at work, and my boss said to me, what are you doing here? And I said, well, it's Friday, and I always work on Friday. He said, well, you should be downtown with your people. And I said, I have people? I didn't know I had people. And he said, yeah. He said, there's a huge protest downtown. There was this assembly bill. It was AB 101. And it, we were protesting them passing it, which was taking away our rights. And he said, now this man marched on Stonewall. And I didn't know this until this whole story came out. And he said, they're down at the Capitol today, and this is what they're doing, and you should be with your people. And I said, well, what makes you think I'm gay? He said, well, I wasn't sure about you. I really wasn't. But your girlfriend comes in twice a week and brings you lunch. I'm thinking you might be gay. And I was just mortified that people knew. So I spent the day on the Capitol, and like I said, it was pretty warm, and I really had a hard time my first year of sobriety keeping my clothes on. And I was a really young 35, that's all I'm saying. So when the press was interviewing the Dykes on Bikes, I happened to be standing next to one, because she was really cute, and my sister called me the next day, and she said, oh my God, I saw these biker dykers, this is what she called them, biker dykers on TV last night, and they were talking about gay rights, and there was a girl standing next to him that looked just like you. And I said, what was she wearing? She said, oh, it was a black lace bra and something else, but the diker bikers had X's on their chest, because you know a lot of them don't wear shirts or bras. And I said, wow, really? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, that was me. Now, this is a sister I shared a room with all my life growing up, and the first things out of her mouth was, oh, my God, you've seen me naked. And I said, oh, my God, I wasn't looking. It was like they were very uncomfortable with me being gay. And so the process for that, I think the hardest was telling my daughter that I was gay. And when I told her, she cried, and I thought, man, if I hadn't screwed up the first 16 years of her life, I really screwed up the rest of her life. Because why? I mean, she was just crying hysterically, and I remember asking her why she was crying, and she said, is it going to happen to me too? And I said, why would you say that? Now, when I first got sober, my original sobriety date was February 7th, and on February 16th, I was using for what I pray to God is the last time, and I didn't know she was going to her first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So for 2.5 years, her sobriety date was one day more than mine. But she's not one of us anymore, and she really isn't one of us. But at that time, this is what she said. You're sober. I'm sober. Your childhood was a little off. Mine was a little off. And now you're gay. Am I going to be gay? And I remember telling her that it wasn't a choice that I made, that just it was who I was. And I had seen a medallion for 90 days, and on the back of it, it says, to thine own self be true. And I thought I couldn't live a lie any longer. I knew I was a drunk. I just knew that. Because on page 21 of the book, it describes a real alcoholic. And I didn't drink every day, but when I drank, I certainly could not predict the outcome. You know, and sometimes I woke up with her, and sometimes I woke up with him. But when I saw the medallion that said, to thine own self be true, I said, I can't lie to myself anymore. This is just who I am. And I won't put it in your face. I won't make you accept it. I'll just be who I'm supposed to be. And you know, in the 19 and a half years I've been sober, I've never had a gay sponsor. My first year of sobriety, I did have a gay home group, but I also had a straight home group or mainstream, I don't know, regular home group. And for the last 18 years, well, 16 anyway, my home group has been the 5:30 happy hour in Oxnard. And it's not gay. I don't even think we have a gay meeting there. And I don't think they care that I'm gay. No, nobody's ever said that. I get, you don't look gay. I'm like, I don't know what gay looks like. I just know who I am. So I don't even know how long I've been talking. Oh, God. So that's the gay part. So you know, I want to say this part. I've, like, truly, truly appreciated every workshop I've been at this weekend so far. I've heard the book. I've heard about the literature. I've heard about service, and I've heard about service at this level and at a bigger level at general service. And it warms my heart to know that in Arizona, you guys are doing it right, by my judgment, and I judged you. So it's like, and I love that you talked about our literature. It's my privilege and honor to serve our area in 93 as the literature chair. And a couple of years ago, I wasn't going to cry when I got up here, but a couple of years ago, this guy from my home group that I wasn't really fond of, because I thought he was pretty opinionated, suggested to me that he thought it would be a good idea that I would make a good newsletter chair. And I said, really? I don't do service at that level. I'm your chair for your conventions. I'm a secretary at conventions and roundups and whatever. And I don't know what happens past the group. I've never done work past the group. And he said, well, you know, you've done pretty much everything you can do at group level. Why don't you try this? And I went to my first area assembly, and I found out that big people play nice. There's no fights or brawls, and things are handled in a really nice manner. And I was interested in what was happening at service, and I applied for the like you could apply. I applied for the newsletter position, and I didn't get it. And I thought, well, they just don't know what they're missing. And a couple of months later, the guy who was awarded or given that position couldn't fulfill it, and I was asked to take on that position. And I am forever grateful for that man who suggested I play with the big people. Because up until that point, I had been on Young People's AA for 17 years. I have had the honor of being on a host committee, ACUPAW, and sponsoring a lot of young women. And so it was nice to be able to see what happens past the group and to be a part of area service. And our panel is ending next month, and it makes me kind of sad that I don't get to make myself available because I'm moving. I just don't know when. And I suppose when God's plan is for me to move is when I'll get to move. But I've been really... my heart has swelled at every meeting I've been at, every panel that you've talked about. The heartbeat of AA for me is service. And I don't know, I'm just really, truly, truly honored and blessed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to be sober today and to be asked to speak on this panel. And actually, I really think that I'm done, so I want to thank you again.
Another round of applause for our awesome panelists. Yay. You guys are fantastic. So let's see, blah, blah, blah. Let me think, our speakers did that. Okay, so does anyone else have something they're supposed to read? Yeah, they're supposed to read A Vision for You. Good job.
A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation that what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And so we're all finished. If we want to circle up and do serenity prayer.